Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're going to start today with more on the debate over charter schools in Massachusetts. The latest chapter in that debate came a couple of weeks ago when Governor Charlie Baker presented a bill that would expand the number of charter schools in the state.
There are 37,000 kids who want to get in to a charter school. 37,000 families who simply want just something bigger and better for their children.
Now, since Governor Baker made that announcement, we've had several guests on the show who are in favor of lifting the charter school cap. One of them is John Connolly, co-founder of the education startup 1647, who says that while the charter school debate has been going on for some time, there is a key difference this year.
The fourth factor I see is Barbara Mattaloni. She has really made it clear she's going to draw a line in the sand, and the MTA is going to put their full effort into this. And I would never count Barbara Mattaloni out. She's an incredibly skilled political leader beyond just the rhetoric. So I think this is a much liver battle, a lot more alive than last year's.
Well, Barbara Mattaloni is president of the MTA, the Massachusetts Teachers Association, one of the most powerful public school advocacy groups in the state, which says that charter schools are dangerous for Massachusetts and could create a two-tiered education system. Barbara Mattaloni joins us now in the studio. Welcome back to Radio Boston.
Good to see you. Glad to be here.
It's great to have you. We're going to dive in deep into the reasons why that you and the MTA are opposed to charter schools. But why don't we just start off with your reaction to what John Connolly says? He points out you specifically as a major factor in why the debate might go differently this year. Your response?
Well, I guess I should thank him. I appreciate the props coming out. I think the main difference actually is not me personally, but that our membership is much more engaged around this issue, and we are building coalitions across the state with other groups, so that the Massachusetts Education Justice Alliance, which includes not only other unions but Jobs with Justice, NAACP, is working together, the Boston Education Justice Alliance, to say no to charters. So it's really not Barbara. It's a broad coalition saying no, keep the cap.
Okay. And do you think that this coalition is emerging now because there is the possibility that there's momentum on the other side of this debate that Governor Baker's legislation could pass?
Well, I think the coalition is forming because there's broad attacks on public education, and charters is just one of those. And certainly not just Governor Baker's legislation, but as well the lawsuit that's been threatened, and then the ballot question that they're collecting signatures for now, are all relevant to us in terms of attacks on traditional public schools and attempts to lift the cap. So we're organizing because they're coming after us. But I will say I am impressed and heartened by the coalition building that we're doing and the degree to which parents who've had their children in charters, teachers who've worked in charters, are coming together to say, actually, the myth of charter schools needs to be debunked. We need to expose them as not the successful schools that they're being touted as. And we need to really say, how can we work together to fully fund our public schools so that every child has the opportunity to have a high quality education, public education?
Yeah, you know, so this is a conversation, statewide in which numbers matter, language matters, intent matters, perspective matters. All of it is very, very important. So I'm listening to you carefully, and I hear you say that there are attacks from charter school advocates on the public school system. But charter school advocates say they're not attacking public education. They're just seeking new and innovative and immediate ways to improve it, to improve access to higher quality education that people are looking for.
I'm not sure how you can improve public education by siphoning funds away from public schools.
But these charter schools are still public, though. They're not private schools.
No, but they are overseen by private entities. And if we are educating for democracy, and I see public education as absolutely foundational to creating a democratic community, then those schools need to be overseen by democratically elected school committees. They need to have the very essence of them is that they are democratic. When we take public funds and we put it into private hands, it may be public money, but it's not. But it's private in terms of how it's run. If you're a parent and you have a student at a charter school, and that student is not performing and begins to be pushed out, you have no recourse because there's no government structure there to help you. You're on your own. Whereas if you're in a public school and your child's running into trouble, there's an entire system in which you can enter and have your voice heard and work with other parents to do that.
But what about
school committee members?
I take your point. But what about parents who say, I similarly feel that I have no recourse because the school, whether it's the neighborhood school or the school that my child gets assigned to, is chronically low performing and I can't get out of that system because I'm not a wealthy person who can just send my kid to a genuinely private school. I don't have any recourse there either.
What I would ask that parent to do, and I ask parents across the state to do this, no matter what district they're in, is to commit to public education, to say we're going to work on this together. The strongest schools that we have are community schools, where the parents are deeply engaged in the school, are working with teachers and students together to say, what do we want for our students? So that's the first piece. We need your voice. We need you to be part of this. And you know what we have to do? We have to fight for funding, for adequate funding. You know, when we talk about an underperforming school, I think we need to sort of step back from that phrase. I see an under-resourced school. You go into some of the schools in Boston. You go into some of the schools in Holyoke. They don't have playgrounds. They don't have musical instruments. They don't have art classes that have a range of medium. They are under-resourced schools relative to our so-called high-performing schools. So if we want to hold each other accountable, I think we have to hold each other accountable to the quality of education and the quality of resources that every child has. Mm. Charter schools make it harder to do that. There are districts that have to cut art programs because they lose money to charters. There are districts that have to cut physical ed. I was out to Cheshire Schools out in Western Mass last week. They have more study halls because they've had to cut teachers because of the charter school draining funds from that district. That's not good for everybody. We need to recommit to all of our children.
We're speaking with Barbara Mataloni. She's president of the Massachusetts Teachers Association. She's currently on leave as senior lecturer in labor studies at UMass Amherst. And she's also formerly a teacher of 10th and 12th grades. Is that right? So
absolutely.
High school teacher as well. What is your question for her about efforts by Governor Baker and others to lift the cap on charter schools? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Barbara Mataloni, I hinted earlier in the introduction to this conversation that we have had some advocates for charter schools on the show recently. We played a little tape from Governor Baker. I want to play a little bit more from him in his recent presenting of his new bill that, by the way, it wouldn't fully lift the cap on charter schools, but it would allow 12 new or expanded charter schools in districts at the bottom 25% of standardized tests. So we'll get into more of the details in just a moment. But here he is saying that this bill would provide much needed or desired relief, in his words, that are being expressed by a lot of families around Massachusetts.
There are 37,000 kids who want to get in to a charter school. Whenever I've been to a lottery, everybody at that lottery cries. The folks who get into a charter school because of the positive opportunity they believe that represents for them. And the people who don't get in, they cry too.
Barbara Mataloni, what's your response to that?
Well, the first thing, and I'm glad you repeated the 37,000 number, that number, according to Suzanne Bump, our state auditor, is inaccurate. If you go back and read the auditor's report in which she looks at charters, and she testified at the hearing last week, she said, we actually don't have any good data to support that, that the numbers on charters are so difficult to make sense of and so incomplete that we can't make broad statements about how many students are on a waiting list. Many of those students are the same student on many waiting lists. So it really is an outrage to me that that number can t- continues to be repeated.
But do you
when the auditor had said very clearly, we don't have the numbers to support that.
So are you disputing for clarity? Are you disputing that there is demand out there for charter schools?
I am disputing the ease with which our governor and others continue to use a number that they know is not accurate, and that's a rhetorical ploy that I am troubled by. I am also really troubled that the governor of Massachusetts, which is where public education has been built, we have so much pride in our public schools, is talking about educating the few and ignoring the many. Public education isn't about a lottery. Public education is about the common good. Public education is that we come together as citizens of the Commonwealth and say, every single one of our children means so much to us, and the future of our democracy means so much to us, that we are going to guarantee that every child has a high-quality public education, not we're going to hold a lottery and we're going to get some people to go and have something else, which I would dispute is even what you should want. But at a very deep level, it's really disturbing.
Yeah. Except you, I mean, Barbara, you know as well as anyone that that in certain cities, it is about a lottery. Even if you're not wanting to get into charter schools, I mean, Boston has a lottery system. So there is a level of lack of empowerment, of chance that a lot of families face all the time. And at least, can you sympathize with those who say, if I can just reach for something which I think might be better for my child, I don't want any limits to how far I can help them reach. And that might mean, for me, a parent, I'm just speaking generically, mm-hmm. that might mean a charter school.
I can certainly sympathize with that as a feeling. But I would ask that person to join us in thinking beyond just your child, that we are stronger as a community when we think beyond our circle. When I was a high school English teacher, I used to work with my students, and one of the questions I would ask them is, how big is your circle? How big is the circle of people that you think about and care about as you're making decisions throughout the course of a day of your life, as you're imagining your future? I think we are a stronger state, a stronger country, stronger communities when each of us tries to expand our circle and commit to something bigger than ourselves. That's what public education means.
I completely get that, and I'm very, very sympathetic to it. But I'm also hearing this as a parent and hearing Barbara Mataloni say, for the good of society, think beyond the interest of your child. But that's like the primary duty of a parent, to think about the best interests of his or her child.
If we look at history,
how long can people wait? We've
been able to make significant changes in this country for the good because people thought beyond their immediate circle. And I'm not pretending that's an easy thing to do, but I'm very worried about what we're losing when we're losing public education. And we can lose public education. New Orleans has no more public schools. If you're a student in school in New Orleans in K-12 and you don't cut it in your charter school, you just get kicked out. And then you got to go in this private struggle to find another place to land. But you know what happens in New Orleans? Most of those kids just don't land anywhere. We're losing all kinds of kids. So it's a very real threat. And at some point, we have to work together to say we're not going to let that threat unfold. Yeah. And let's really work together. And I think the lessons for our young people, when we work together to fight for public education, will be so much stronger than any lessons that they're going to get in a hyper-control, test-prep charter school.
We've got a ton of callers who want to join us. I'm going to get to them in just a second, but there is one question which I feel like is just looming here, and let's face it head on. How much of this, of the opposition to charter schools, has to do with the fact that in most of those schools, the faculty, the teaching faculty, are non-unionized?
My chief objection are the ones I've been putting out. I don't think you're getting a quality education. I think I am deeply committed to public education. I came into education later in life because of my commitment to public education. And educators enter public schools because of that commitment. That charter schools are not unionized is That's why the people who are promoting charter schools, the hedge fund managers, and the billionaires, they love the idea that they're not unionized. But here's the thing that we know about Massachusetts. Do you know why our schools are so strong? Because we have unionized schools. The states in this country that have the strongest public education also have unionized schools. Finland, we're always looking to Finland. Finland has unionized schools. The Chicago Lab School, where Rahm Emanuel sends his children, and Arne Duncan's going to send his when he moves, unionized teaching staff. We should absolutely want unionized staff because we're going to get higher quality conditions for our students' learning when we have higher quality conditions for our teachers.
So let's get to the callers. Blaine is calling from Lancaster. You're on the air, Blaine.
Thanks for taking my call. Well, I think what your guest is missing is that parents are looking for charter schools as an opportunity to find the education that is right for their child. You know, she says she wants partners. Try to go to a public school and talk about changing the curriculum, differentiated instruction. You don't have a partner. You have a faculty and staff that says, this is how we do it, and that's the way it is. So she can say she wants a partner. The teachers aren't a partner in a public school, and that's why parents such as myself go to charter schools, hope to get in, so that we get a better sense that, you know what, the tax dollars that we are paying to the common good are going toward educating our children the way that we think, as parents, they need to be educated.
Blaine, you put a lot on the table, Blaine. Thank you so much for your call. Let me just let Barbara Mataloni have a chance to answer.
I think there are a couple of pieces that I would want to respond to there, Blaine. First of all, what's happened in our schools right now is that we have this accountability regime, which is not giving educators an opportunity to have autonomy and develop their curriculum, which is wrapping things very tight around administrators. So what's happening is that they're using high-stakes testing and a narrowing of the curriculum so that parents like you are frustrated. And that's part of a larger plan, which is to have someone like you say, this isn't working, I'm going to go over here. We need to end the high-stakes testing. We need to give teachers more autonomy. And we need to really work, and I will say this, in our public schools so that we have opportunities for parents and students and teachers to sit down and talk together about what we want. That's more local control, and we need to create opportunities to do that. But we should do that so that every child has that opportunity. Every family has that opportunity, not a select few.
Toya is calling from Cambridge. You're on the air, Toya.
Hi. I'm insulted, actually, by her comments, Barbara. First of all, when you talk about kids in terms of learning, you know, Boston Public Schools have for years had a really difficult time in terms of teaching, especially kids of color. And when you talk about losing kids, how many kids of color have we lost, especially to the School of Prison Pipeline? I don't understand your thoughts, and I think what your points are really self-serving. They are not about kids, and they are not about parents, but they are simply about teachers and not about families and communities.
Toya, thank you so much for your call. You hear the passion there and the emotion.
I hear the passion, and I completely agree with Toya that our public schools throughout the country, we are a country that has been founded on racism. Racism continues to be a part of all of our institutions, and our public schools have oftentimes and many times failed our students of color. I don't think the answer to that is hyper-control charter schools, where if you want to talk about feeding the school-to-prison pipeline, the trend in charter schools for hyper-control, where there's these disciplinary practices that force students out who are unable to comply with those disciplinary practices are actually a particular danger in terms of the school-to-prison pipeline. Now, I'm not saying we don't have to address that in every school, but I am really troubled by how that's happening in our charter schools. Part of why the NAACP has signed on with us, with the Major Coalition, is their deep concern about the resegregation of our schools through charter schools and about the school-to-prison pipeline. Yes, Toya, I mean, we have to take on racism. I just think we need to do that together within the context of public schools. And I am not saying that's going to be easy, But I don't think charter schools are the answer to the much more complex issue of who are we as a country and how do we come together as a community, given our history and given our current context.
Don't we have some competing issues here that are just going to be difficult, if not impossible, to resolve? Because on the one hand, I don't think many people would want to argue against your call for improving public education overall, for funding it in a way that provides an equal and high quality education to all children, to getting families involved, to reforming testing regimes, etc. But these are all things, Lord, anyone who's taken a look at the world of education knows, takes time to enact. It's not going to happen next year. It's not going to happen 5 years from now. It's going to take time. Systemic change takes time. But on the other hand, we have all these parents, a couple of whom we've just heard from today, mm-hmm. who say, I don't have time. I've got 13 years from kindergarten to the 12th grade to do the best that I can for my children. Mm-hmm. And I need other options.
And I am, democracy takes time. Building the kind of communities that we want take time. Blaine and Toya are going to make their decisions, and I will respect those. But as a larger community, we need to make decisions that are not about those individual needs. We need to make decisions as a community. The legislators need to think not only about today and tomorrow, but about 5 years from now, about 10 years from now, about 20 years from now. As an educator, that's what I need to be thinking about. What's in front of me and where is this going? We all have that responsibility. And so we have to not let a system be created that has the possibility to leave us in 5, 10, 15 years with no public education.
But I promise you
that can happen. And yes, the governor's bill would allow that to happen.
It's 12 additional schools a year,
yes,
across the entire state, though.
Because you know what could happen? Holyoke could have no charter schools and no public schools in 1 year. They could go in and they could say, bottom 25%, we're going to open 12 charters here. The governor's bill also has a lot of poison pills relative to level 4 and 5 schools and the ability to charterize those schools. This can happen. It has happened. In L.A. right now, the Broad Foundation is working to charterize the L.A. district.
But, of course, the counterargument to that is those are the districts where the fastest, most immediate change is needed. So if you put 12 charters, hypothetically, in Holyoke, maybe that's for the best because they're at the bottom of the bottom.
And then what will we have? We will have private education overseen by private entities. That's not what public education is about. We either, like at some point, as we have to just make decisions about that for ourselves. As a community, together, are we going to be invested in the common good or are we going to be invested in our individual needs? And I'm not saying that's an easy thing for one person, but I'm not speaking for one person. I'm speaking for how can we look at the world in front of us and the world that we want to create? Do I think it's very dangerous, whether it's about schools or about mass transit, whatever it's about, that we become a society where it's just, that's what I need right now for myself? That's not what a democracy is.
Yeah. Well, Barbara Mataloni, I am monopolizing the time here, and I know that we have other callers who want to talk to you, so let's bring them back in. Yasmin is calling from Dorchester. You're on the air, Yasmin.
Hi, yes. I graduated Boston Public Schools in 2011, so I'm speaking as a student, and I am very in favor for Boston Public Schools because I was able to take advantage of outside programs such as Upward Bound, Summer Search, and other programs that offered a different type of experience, a learning experience. Also, students were able to do sports. A lot of people in charter schools aren't able to even participate in sports. They don't have sports teams. And those are all activities that every student should have available to them because it teaches common sense and social skills that you need. I can tell you right now that middle school kids that I went to school with and I have on Facebook and graduated from charter schools, they are struggling in college and struggling in certain areas that I feel like they would have done better in if they were in public traditional schools where they could have had more social interactions or choices of what they wanted to do, such as sports or, you know, do after school programs.
Right.
There's so many other options as for doing homework and to get the help that you need that aren't in just one place. And they leave school like at 8 o'clock at night. I mean, granted, I was coming home at 8 o'clock at night too, but I was in several programs. I met several mentors.
Yasmin, I'm so sorry to jump in on you. Forgive me for interrupting you, but I can hear your passion and also your personal experience here at a Boston public school, and I thank you for your call. I just want to give Barbara Mataloni a chance to respond to what Yasmin said.
Thanks, Yasmin, for helping me remember one of the important things that we need to talk about, which is that well-funded public schools or public schools that are not well-funded, because Boston is not well-funded enough, but that are spending their money well, offer an incredible range of opportunities of experiences for young people coming in. And besides that, what that does for you as an individual, it really is, again, creating the sort of opportunities for diversity of experience, of ways of knowing the world, of ways of thinking about the world, of ways of learning that are that constitute what I want for every child to have the opportunity to have. The other thing that I want to also pick up on what you said, Yasmin, is that we actually have a study from the Boston Foundation, which are supporters of charter schools, that show that Boston Public School graduates graduate from college more successfully than Boston students who are graduating from charter schools and going on to college. So they do better in college. They're more successful in terms of completing college. We have evidence to show that.
Let's get another call. Rebecca is calling from Winchester. You're on the air, Rebecca.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to address a point that Ms. Mataloni brought up earlier about the level of community involvement in underperforming schools. She asserted that parents care less or are far less involved with their schools, and that is a factor for a school that is categorized as underperforming. And the research shows that that is just a miscategorization of the desire that parents have to be involved in their child's education. And I was wondering if she could speak to that point and additionally address how she would increase community involvement in traditional public schools, if that is indeed a factor that she has identified as one that causes schools to underperform.
Rebecca, thank you so much for your call, because you bring up a very interesting and important point, because I just want to dovetail a little bit with what she says, because, you know, a lot of parents are unable to be more involved simply because, you know, maybe they're working multiple jobs and don't have the time, or there's language barriers, or they're just unfamiliar with the system.
If that's what I communicated, I misspoke. That is not at all, I did not intend to say that schools are underperforming because families are not involved. That's not what I meant to say at all. What I meant to say is that the answer to the identifying underperforming schools is not to pull people out into charters, but to engage, to work through the issues of how hard many parents are working, to work through the issues of language barriers and cultural differences, so that we can have even more engagement, to figure out the structures in order to do that, to free up teacher time so that they're available to do that. That community schools that operate like that are most successful for everybody. And we have to do more work to do that. That's my ideal, is that we're more effective in reaching out to people, bringing them in, and building the strength of our schools from the strength of parents, the knowledge that parents bring, that students bring, and that educators bring.
So, you know, there's one more piece of tape that I want to play today, because the charter school debate has been going on for some time in Massachusetts. We just happened to be talking about it this time around vis-a-vis a bill put forth by a Republican governor. But we've got some tape here from Governor Deval Patrick, of course, Democrat, back in 2014. He was a supporter of lifting of charter schools. And here's what he said back in, again, March 2014.
As the only governor in 30 years who's raised the charter cap, I'm a supporter of charter schools. I don't, as you know, think they are the sole solution to all that that ails us. And I think that the more innovation and flexibility we're seeing in the district schools, the better results those district schools are getting.
Now, Barbara Mataloni, I wanted to play this piece of tape for one particular reason, because whether or not a cap gets lifted or eliminated or not, we have charter schools in the state. They're here. I'm wondering if there's any part of the MTA's view on charter schools that may allow for the possibility that the sheer presence of them, some alternative model for education, is forcing or encouraging innovation in the district schools themselves. And then and to that point, that just on that, they're a good thing. That an absence of pressure from the outside would be a disservice to district schools.
I have to say, first of all, we have no evidence that that's happened. We have no evidence that the innovation of charter schools is being shared, if you want to call hyper-control test prep factories innovation. But while – I mean, I was sort of stunned by Governor Patrick's talking about innovation and flexibility in the context of a system of mandates and hyper-accountability that is choking the creativity, the joy, and the possibility of our public schools. So what do people want innovation? Then untie our hands. Then let teachers light sparks and be creative in the classroom and develop curriculum that is relevant to the lives of the students in front of them and not have their hands tied by testing and accountability measures, which narrow our curriculum. It's an absurd kind of place that we're put in, where we're saying you're not innovating, but you better teach, you better have those objectives on the board, and you better have this test prep done in order to get the test scores that are going to matter. It's an outrage, and it's absurd. Untie our hands.
Does the MTA want to see zero charter schools in Massachusetts?
I want to see them to keep the cap. We do not need charter schools. We need more funding so that we need autonomy, and we need deep community involvement so that we can create the public schools for every single child in Massachusetts, high quality, creative, joyful, varied curriculum that every child needs and deserves.
Well, Barbara Mataloni is president of the Massachusetts Teachers Association. She's also on leave as senior lecturer in labor studies at UMass Amherst and a former teacher herself of 9th, 10th, and 12th grade. It's been a real pleasure to speak with you and to hear you interact with our callers. Thank you so very much for coming in today.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed being on, and I appreciate the caller's comments.
We look forward to having you back because obviously this conversation is going to keep going.
Absolutely.
Well, listeners, stick with us. When we come back, we'll talk about changes in the biotech sector in Massachusetts. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.